enormity of what was happening to his dream. Grant said, "Professor, perhaps if you called Dr. Cardenas, she..." The office door slid open, and Chris Cardenas stepped in. "With another woman." Grant recognized the newswoman, Edie Elgin. "The two of them look almost like sisters," Grant realized. "Bright, youthful, blonde, like a pair of former cheerleaders." Cardenas was not in a cheerleading mood, though. "I've been down in the mirror lab," she said, without preamble. "That's why I'm late." Ulrich roused himself from his funk enough to introduce, "Gentlemen, this is Edie Elgin, the famous video news star." Edith smiled prettily for them as Grant got to his feet and pulled out a chair for her. Cardenas went around the table and settled next to McClintock. "You inspected the mirror lab's airlock?" Ulrich asked, smoothing his silver hair with an automatic gesture. Cardenas nodded. "What happened to the airlock looks superficially like what happened to your technician's spacesuit, but I just don't have the diagnostic tools here to be certain." McClintock looked across the table at Edith. "Miss Elgin, you understand that this is all off the record for the time being. If you can't agree to that, we'll have to ask you to leave."
"It's okay with me," Edith answered easily. "I'll keep my mouth shut until you've got things under control."
"Good." McClintock turned back to Cardenas. "If we were in Cellini, I'd have the equipment for a thorough analysis," Cardenas went on. "But here..." She left the thought unfinished. "What about the equipment in the maintenance center?" Grant asked. "Toshio has that laser probe." Cardenas almost smiled at him. "Do you want to lug that clunker over to your mirror lab, or drag the airlock hatch to the maintenance center?" Grant understood the problem, but he shook his head as he answered, "We know the spot in the hatch where the leak developed. We take a slice from that region of the hatch and carry it to the maintenance center. That could work."
"And what would it tell us?" Cardenas argued. "That there's a pinhole leak that was caused by nanomachines. We already know that."
"We suspect that," McClintock corrected.
"With about a 90% accuracy," said Cardenas.
"So what do we do?" Grant demanded. "Just sit around here while the damned bugs nibble us to death?"
Cardenas said, "If I knew what kind of nanos they are, what they're designed to do, what their limits are, then I could figure out a way to stop them."
"How long would that take?" McClintock asked. Cardenas shrugged.
"We're all doomed," said Ulrich in a deathly whisper. "We are infested with nanomachines, and they will kill us all. I should never have allowed nanomachines to enter Farside."
With some heat, Cardenas replied,
"Professor, I assure you that the nanos we've used to build your mirrors have nothing to do with this problem."
"And the nanos in my body?" Grant asked.
"Impossible," she said firmly. "How many times do I have to tell you that?"
"Then where did these destructive nanomachines come from?" Grant wondered. McClintock said, "According to Luongo, Anita Halleck was lying to us when she said she hadn't been exposed to nanomachines."
"That's pretty thin," said Grant.
"Do you have anything thicker?"
"If we confront her, she'll just deny everything," Grant said.
Then he murmured,
"Unless..."
"Unless what?" Feeling terribly uncertain about the entire matter, Trudy Yost tapped softly on the door to Anita Halleck's quarters.
"Who is it?"
came Halleck's muffled voice.
"Trudy Yost," she said. "Professor Ulrich's assistant."
Halleck slid the door back and stood framed in the doorway for a moment, eyeing Trudy haughtily. Halleck was several centimeters taller than Trudy. She was wearing a one-piece jumpsuit that accentuated her trim figure. Trudy was in her best coveralls, powder blue, but they were rumpled and faded from long use.
"Professor Ulrich asked me to see if there's anything we can do for you."
"Yes, you told me that on the phone,"
said Halleck as she ushered Trudy into her room.
"I presume the professor wants to make my captivity here as comfortable as possible."
Trudy blinked at the word captivity, but recovered enough to ask,
"Is there anything you need?"
"I need to get back to Cellini," Halleck snapped. "Actually, I need to get back to Earth, back to my work, instead of being detained in this outpost."
"I suppose the accommodations here are kind of primitive," Trudy admitted, "compared to what you're used to."
Trudy saw that Halleck's travel bag was on the bed, fully packed and zipped up. "She's ready to go," Trudy realized.
"Is there anything I can get for you?" she asked. "Do you want a dinner tray or—"
A frown etching her fashion model's face, Halleck said,
"Just get me out of here. I want to leave."
I want to get back home.
I understand how you feel, Trudy said, as she stepped hesitantly toward the sofa. But with the facility under lockdown, there's nothing we can do but to wait for them to figure out how to deal with the problem.
Wait for how long? Halleck demanded. Until we're all killed? We've got to get out of here.
But there's no place to go, Trudy said, trying to sound reasonable, rational. Selene won't take any flights from here.
As if the idea had just popped into her head, Halleck said, What about the sites you've built for your telescopes? They have shelters for people, don't they? Food and water, air recyclers, don't they?
Surprised by the idea, Trudy replied, Yes, they do. But only the Mendeleev site is completed. And there was a nanomachine incident there. One of our technicians was killed.
But the other two sites? Halleck pressed.
What about them? They haven't been hit by nanos, have they?
No, said Trudy. But there's nothing there except the concrete slabs that will be the foundations for the telescopes to be built at them. And the shelters, of course.
There's been no nanomachine activity at either of them?
Trudy slowly shook her head.
No, neither at Korolev or Gagarin.
And they both have shelters where we could live for a few days?
A week or more?
Then let's go to one of them, Halleck said eagerly. We can stay there until this mess is taken care of.
I don't think Professor Ulrich...
Damn Ulrich! Halleck snapped. I'll provide you with all the authority you need. If Ulrich fires you, I'll bring you into my project, I promise you.
Almost dazed by Halleck's insistence, Trudy said, We'd need a hopper to get out to Korolev. It's too far to go by tractor.
So? There are hoppers sitting outside, aren't there?
Four of them, said Trudy. But you can't just walk out and take one. You need permission from the flight control director, and
I'll take care of that, Halleck answered.
With a knowing smile, she added,
Money talks.
Do you know how to fly a hopper?
No, of course not.
Neither do I, said Trudy, thinking that would put an end to Halleck's wild scheme. But Halleck said,
That man Obermann can fly a hopper, I'm sure.
Nate? I suppose so.
Get him on the phone, Halleck commanded. Tell him to come here, quickly.
Prisoner. Josie Rivera was watching a comedy video on the main screen of her console. She was taking her assigned turn as flight control monitor, sitting alone in Farside's cramped control center. Just two workstations, and the one next to Josie's was unoccupied and dark. Nothing coming in and nothing going out, Josie thought, bored almost to tears. We should just shut down the center altogether. There's no reason to keep it manned. The ulcer would have a fit, though. Everybody's going through the motions, pretending everything's normal, pretending there's no threat, no danger. The comedy she was watching was inane, a trio of grown men acting like irresponsible idiots. But she tried to concentrate on their dim-witted antics, trying to keep the fear at bay. The facility is infested with nanomachines, she knew. Somewhere, somehow, invisibly small monsters have invaded us, mindless, merciless things the size of viruses are chewing away at us, and they won't stop until we're all dead. They'll keep chewing away at us and kill everybody, each and every one of us. They're going to kill me and...
Stop it! She screamed silently,
pounding both fists on the console's desktop.
Stop it!
Nobody's chewing on you. Grant and Dr. Cardenas will find out what's wrong and fix it.
Yeah, she told herself. You hope.
The phone on the console buzzed, making her twitch with surprise.
Answer, Josie said.
Nate Obermann's lantern-jawed face appeared on the phone screen, a crafty smile on his thin lips. Without preamble, he asked, How'd you like to make a couple thousand smackers for doing nothing? Unless what? McClintock repeated. Grant hunched forward slightly in his chair. Mrs. Halleck was all stewed up about getting away from Farside.
Anita Halleck? Edith asked. She just came in here on the same flight with me.
She wasn't happy about coming back here, Grant said, and she sure worked up a sweat trying to get out. McClintock nodded slowly. Anita did seem unusually emotional about it. Not her normal cool self, not at all. Because she knows we're being attacked by nanos, Grant said.